This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:46 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Joyce Goh, Koo Soo Chuang and me, Melissa Idris. Now, coming up on The Breakfast Grill in about 15 to 20 minutes or so, we have Dato' Dennis Chua, the founder of Iklimo, which is an electric vehicle company that manufactures electric bikes. Iklimo started off as a green tech R&D company back in 2008, and today it is the only company in Malaysia that makes electric motorbikes. So continuing on our, I guess, a theme to look at auto players. Yesterday we spoke to Burma's Auto. Today, Joyce, you're going to be speaking to Iklimo.
Yes, I think Dennis is going to talk about why he ventured into such a business and why he thinks there's demand despite his bikes. I think they're priced about 18,800
a pop. 18,000 for a bike?
Yes.
And Chuang, did you pick up your jaw off the floor?
Well, you see, it's all in the model. And I spoke to him off by the sidelines, it's in media in lingo. It's not a consumer play. Right now, it's a B2C play. And so he has actually, his customers are the big, you know, delivery boys, the KFCs and McDonald's. And it's not a sale model, it's a rental model. So
it's still quite fascinating, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going to also discuss about the macro platform for the electric vehicles here and the policies needed in countries to drive the agenda through. I mean, is Malaysia ready for this?
That's a good question. Let's find out more on The Breakfast Grill as Joyce speaks to Dato' Dennis Chua, the founder of the only company in Malaysia that makes electric motorbikes, Iklimo. More on that after the 8 o'clock news. But speaking of breakfast grills, earlier this month I spoke to UM academic Prof. Terence Gomez on The Breakfast Grill to talk about his latest book, which is called Minister of Finance Incorporated, Ownership and Control of Corporate Malaysia. And the central argument of that book is that corporate Malaysia essentially is controlled and dominated by GLCs, government-linked companies. And on this front, we have an update on this from S&P Global Ratings, which has found a sharp deterioration in credit trends of GLCs.
Yes, so there's a report by S&P, and the story came out in the Edge Financial Daily, and they're saying that Malaysian non-financial GLCs recorded the sharpest deterioration in credit trend among ASEAN peers since 2011. So their median debt-to-EBITDA ratio increased by fourfold in the first quarter of this year as compared to the 2011 level. So, I mean, this is they're looking at this and it's quite alarming. I mean, the findings of this study is on 52 selected non-financial GLCs in Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand and Indonesia.
Why non-financial GLCs?
Perhaps that is what they have looked at. So some of the GLCs they looked at are Tenaga, Petronas, Malaysia Airports, UMW, Sime W, Felder Global Ventures, Telecom and Bastard Holdings.
Oh, big names. Big
as soon as you said that, only one name popped up, which is Felder Global Ventures, but for the wrong reasons. But this S&P research note, it only tells part of the story, because as we know, GLCs in Malaysia have a dual role. They've got this national interest mandate as well as the commercial mandate, and part of the national mandate is to build out Malaysia's growth aspirations for the future. So it kind of like is justified, even though the income is not there, because a lot of it is long-term infrastructure projects, MRT Corp, ERL, for example, the East Coast Railway Link, the Borneo Expressway, things like that. So these guys, you know, these kind of projects, they don't throw off income in year one, even year two, year three, year four. They start to contribute year five, year six. So in a way, you can kind of see where it's going. And this might be a little bit of a spot discussion on this, but, you know, be that as it may, you know, corporate debt is one big concern. I mean, we spoke to The Economist, can't remember his name, from Australia, the contrarian economist. And even though governments can print their way out of debt because they have control of the printing presses, corporate debt and household debt can't be printed out. So some concern there.
Are you saying that this is we shouldn't be so concerned given that these are long-term projects? Or what's the argument?
Well, in a way, because we don't see these specific projects being discussed. Because which obviously jibes with Professor Gomez's discussion in the sense that a lot of the GLCs are quite opaque in the operations. We can't really see beyond the listed GLCs. And there's a whole bunch, there's a whole plethora of non-listed GLCs.
Well, according to a study, they noted that among ASEAN countries, the median leverage of Indonesians and Malaysian GLCs, the rating firm reviewed, was roughly twice that of non their non-GLC domestic counterparts in the first quarter of 2017. So they're comparing with the other GLCs in other ASEAN countries.
Right, okay. Yeah. So in a case, is it a like-for-like comparison? I don't know, but
yeah, perhaps different
neighbouring countries, different. Yeah.
Well, exactly on that front, it's good discussion because, Melissa, when I look at, say, Singapore versus Malaysia, Singapore is a lot smaller geographically than Malaysia. In fact, some might say it's a bit of a dot on the map. But, you know, when you look at the debt to EBITDA ratios, there is no segment in Singapore's perspective, whether from 2016 or whether from 2011, which has debt in the order of 4 to 5 times EBITDA, you know, debt to EBITDA, whereas Malaysia has had this swelling red spectrum, and it's only gotten bigger in the last 5 years.
Well, speaking about Singapore, yesterday we had Malaysian GLC Prasarana Berhad signing an MOU with Singapore's SMRT Corp, and this is on the rapid transit system project between Johor Bahru and Woodlands North in Singapore. So they've set up an operating company to run this this RTS, this rapid transit system.
So exactly. So that's exactly what this S&P research refers to, because this is non-listed, non-financial GLCs that have been tasked with building up Malaysia's infrastructure, transport infrastructure. But obviously, this debt's got to go somewhere. It's got to be paid somehow.
Yes, I think this was brought up at the PC yesterday, and they asked if debt-laden Prasarana is able to operate the link. And its CEO, Dato' Sri Azmi Abdul Aziz, said that the government will issue a guarantee for it to raise the funds via the market.
Yeah.
So he commented that on them being a going concern, they are going through a transformation program now. So what's important is how they can get all public transportation infrastructure up. That's the main thing. That's what he's saying.
Have you guys taken the MRT?
Yes.
Fantastic product, right?
Yes.
Fantastic. Better than the London Tube anytime. I paid,
$2
Well, cleaner
for
a start. Yeah, less people. But, you know, it costs, 40, 50? I don't know how much billion ringgit. And the ticket prices from my house to, Lot 10 was two ringgit. Mm-hmm. How many years will it take the government to make the MRT pay for itself?
And often public infrastructure projects may not even
pay for itself,
right? It could be a loss-making project, but it's there for the development of the country. So in a sense, GLCs have this dual mandate where do you look at, the mandate of the national agenda, or do you look at making as much profit as you can?
Well, one way, obviously, is to make the project as efficient as possible, so to only pay one ringgit when it only costs one ringgit and not to pay something a lot more.
I completely understand where you're going with that, but Wan Sai Ful Wan Jun, the CEO of Ideas, is saying that perhaps one way to do this is to look to have more transparency in Malaysian GLCs. So it's the ones that the unlisted ones are the ones that we know nothing about and perhaps have the most to worry about.
Yeah, so you and I are on the same side of the coin there, Melissa. Say no more. Nudge, wink.
7:54 right now. Yes, Joyce.
Interestingly, GLCs contribute close to 15% of gross domestic product and 5% of national employment. This is Malaysian state-owned enterprises here.
You know, one of the questions I asked Professor Terence Gomez is, what's the difference between a GLC and a state-owned enterprise? And it turns out, it's the same thing. It's just Malaysia and Singapore are the only two countries to use the term state-owned enterprise.
Yeah,
the rest of
that.
The world doesn't really like the SOEs. Yep, so that's something to mull over. As we look at MIDF, which has some interesting information on daily fund flows. So last week, there was quite a big sell-off in flows, the most in 10 months. And this could be the fact that hot money is not based on macro data or policy issues, but rather on sentiment, because foreign investors offloaded 478 million ringgit net of Malaysian equities last week. This wipes out the previous week's inflows of 345 million ringgit inflows net.
Well, there's so much hot money in the world because of the 10 years of quantitative easing by not just the Americans, but the Europeans as well as the Japanese. So there's a lot of hot money flowing around. You've got to find a home. Good point, Melissa. Do we get concerned? Well, MIDF is saying we don't necessarily have to get concerned yet, because outflows have only been recorded in 9 of the 38 weeks so far this year, which is a safe level. But a lot of it is really predicated on what's happening from a global front. You've got the Fed balance sheet unwind, you've got the Trump tax plan, you've got all kinds of stuff which is dictating the dollar and the US economy, and by correlation, how that affects emerging markets.
Well, is there an impact to our economy or our stock markets given the volatility, if we can say, of hot flow of funds, hot money funds, inflows and outflows? You know, you've got inflows net one week and then outflows net the other week. Does that have an impact on us at all?
Yeah, you know, I just want to cite comments by a guy called Stan Druckenmiller. He's one of the oldest fund managers on Wall Street. He's like,
is that your buddy?
No, not really. I don't know him from Adam, but
Stan the man.
Stan the man. So Stan Druckenmiller said that basically fund managers and investors, you don't look at macro, you don't look at economic data. You look at basically central bank policy, and then you try and get ahead of the curve. That's what you do. So if the Federal Reserve, and this the market doesn't really know what's going to happen, if the Federal Reserve has got $4.5 trillion of bonds and it's got to unwind and reintroduce back into the global markets at a time when it also is considering raising interest rates, no one has the foggiest what's going to happen, because it's unprecedented. There's never been this big a wall of money re-entering the markets ever before.
Well, but history shows that central bank balance sheet reductions are often bumpy and it can lead to recessions. So like you said, it's still unknown. But all this hot money flowing in, flowing out, it happens all the time. Mm. It's just as long as it doesn't flow out as much as it flows in, or the number of times it flows out. Like as Chong mentioned, this year it's only recorded 9 out of 38 weeks that we have seen outflow. Yeah.
So
info,
as long
right?
as it's not a prolonged outflow, then only we should probably be worried. Yes. Okay, well, let's macro and policy concerns aside, let's take a look at how some companies are still funding growth pockets, starting with Sime Darby. Both of its plantation and property units have announced dividend policies. That's good corporate governance, but does it mean that prospects are improving?
Well, it depends, because, you know, when companies announce dividend policies, that means they are promising to shareholders that they're going to be returning a certain portion of after-tax profit is as dividends. And as a rule, you don't break that policy, because that's what you do. You have a certain predictability and a certain sustainability over that income growth. And for Sime Darby to say, we're going to be returning 50% of profit in our plantations division to shareholders, that's obviously good news, because it means predictability and some kind of certainty for investors. And who are the biggest shareholders, right? Obviously, PNB is the biggest owner of Sime Darby property, Sime Darby plantation. EPM's got 10%, Co-op's got 6%, and 37% in the public markets. But it also means that they feel that, you know, the good times are back in a way with plantations, because they've got this huge ecosystem upstream and downstream which they can find synergies from.
Yeah, they also shared Sime Darby property showed that they actually have developable land GDV of 101 billion ringgit. Here, that's part of their prospectus draft.
Okay, so perhaps prospects are improving. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. Dr. Dennis Chua, the founder of Iklimo, which is an electric vehicle company that manufactures electric motorbikes. Find out more on The Grill, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.